Welcome back to the MicroConf podcast. In this episode, we learn about the ultimate step-by-step hiring guide for SaaS founders. This is a talk I gave last year, might have been 12, 18 months ago, about hiring. It's from MicroConf Europe. And tickets for MicroConf Europe 2025 are on sale now. We have sold out our last two events in Dubrovnik and New Orleans, and this one will sell out too. We're heading to a new location this year, Istanbul, Turkey. To get all the information and the lowest prices, head to microconf.com/Europe. I've never been to Istanbul, and I am stoked to go there. I hope to see you there. And with that, let's dive into the ultimate step-by-step hiring guide for SaaS founders.
Some pretty prescriptive slides in here where I'm basically like, look, 90% of the time, if you're a single founder developer in a low-touch sales funnel, your first hire should be X. And I'm gonna show you what X is. And your second hire should be Y, and I'm gonna show you what that is. And I go through like 25 different scenarios. Those are the ones I'll go through a little fast. I typically may have my talks in three sections. Today's menu, first section will be about job titles and about incentive programs, you know, equity, stock options, and the like. But it's for bootstrapped and mostly bootstrapped companies, right? So that's where I'm gonna give my opinions and caveats. Second section is about hiring, what I'm calling hiring paths, where I'm just like super prescriptive. Not 100% of the time, but based on what I see across tiny seed investments, my own investments, microcomp companies, if you're a two-founder company with this and that in high touch, like I'm gonna tell you, I think this should be your first hire unless you have a reason not to. And the third part's gonna be about firing yourself. Okay, so the hiring paths are just your first two hires. It's really early stage stuff because I find a lot of people don't know what to do with the first hire, second hire. But of course, I can't go to third, fourth, fifth because like the tree gets way too big. Firing yourself is about, as the founder, we have to fire ourselves from a lot of jobs. How do I decide what's the next one to let go? What's the next one I should hire, and how do I put kind of build a job description? So those are the three sections. All right, titles and equity. So I've made almost all these mistakes, and if I haven't made them, I've seen companies that I advise make them, companies I've been affiliated with it, or I've gotten questions like this on the podcast. So one common mistake is inventing job titles. So I worked for big companies, most of us have. I hated the corporate bureaucracy, so when I got out, I said, I don't care about job titles. They're a bunch of bullshit. It's stuff MBAs made up. So when I started hiring people, I was like, I don't know, we need to like scale some stuff and with architecture. So senior scaling architect, right, is a thing we made up. Other job titles I've seen, code ninja, customer success, master, right? These are like cool and they make us hip. There are problems with this. As a bootstrapper, if you have two, three, four people, not such a problem. The moment you get up to 10, 20, 30, you start actually company building, right? There's three stages of what we do. First, you're building a product, then you're building a business. It's when you get a few people. And then company building is when you start hiring managers and kind of fleshing things out. We posted a job after Drip got acquired. We had buckets of venture capital because our acquirer did. We posted a job. We needed someone to help us scale because Derek Reimer in the audience, because we had PTSD from our queues backing up. So we said, well, we want a senior architect who can scale stuff, so we're going to do this. And we had our in-house recruiter who was like, that's not a real job title. And I said, yeah, don't worry. I know what I'm doing. So the first thing we, she goes and she runs a salary survey. And which salary survey is like, we're in Minneapolis, how much should we pay this person? And there is zero data. So I was like, okay, so I guess aren't they maybe just a senior architect or something? Maybe we'll just kind of wing it. So then we post it and we get very little interest because guess what people looking for jobs do? They type in job titles as saved searches. Guess who had senior scaling architect or code ninja typed in? Exactly three people, right? So we didn't get very much interest. And the last thing is, I've seen this happen where, you know, they're pretty defined hierarchies. Like, we don't think about it, or I say I don't think about it because I'm a founder and I'm going to do whatever. Career progression is not a word I have. I'm going to start the next company. Most developers, most customer success people, they want to advance in their career. And that means getting more money and a higher title, right? They usually care about titles more than we do. I'm generalizing. But if they come out of your org with a title of Code Ninja, Customer Success Master, like it's kind of a disservice to them. They have to now explain what they were actually doing. And what they're gonna say is, yeah, so I was a Code Ninja, so pretty much I'm, you know, an equivalent to a software engineer. or a senior software engineer, right? That's how they're going to translate it when they go work for a, you know, a company with real titles. So I quickly learned the folly of this. Now, not why I was bootstrapping, right? We got up to 10 people with titles, not this bad, but you know, there were kind of goofy titles. And then when we got acquired, I was like, yeah, by the time you get to 15 or 20, this is a problem. So to find out, well, so what are the right titles, right? Go to Google. Go to ChatGPT. I pulled this almost directly from Google. I just said, what is a standard engineering title hierarchy? And are we doing this because we want to be MBAs with KPIs on our GS, TPS reports? No, we aren't. But for all the reasons I just said, I'd advise not making up job titles. There are standard title hierarchies for customer success as well. Customer support, marketing, you know, this is just engineering, just to show you how prescriptive it is and how there are standards for this. And it's something, again, I dismissed because I'm a pirate bootstrapper, but like, I would advise you, maybe don't. Other big mistake that I've seen done, luckily I have never done this actually, but I've seen it done, and it's not good. It's elevated job titles. Three-person team, we need our first person. Again, this sounds, our third hire was a customer success person, but I called her the customer success manager, which was the right role for it. But I saw someone hire their first customer success person, and they gave her the title of head of customer success. Well, she's running it because she's the only one. If you're a head of customer success, if you hire another person, they should probably slot under them, right? They should be a manager. And this person had not hired anyone with management experience. So why this person, the customer success person, knew what they were doing, that title was not, it didn't match, right? And again, we can say titles don't matter, but they do, because then, okay, so now I have this misfit, if you will. I have a head of customer success who really shouldn't be managing people. So now I want to hire someone more senior than them, I guess. So now you're the head of customer success, and are you managed by the manager of customers, the director of, like, it just starts janking up your org chart a little quick. Don't want to do this in day one. The other one, and this is, I see this all the time actually, more common than I should, is a non-technical founder or two. They get 2-3 employees in, and then they say, I really want someone on the team who's going to run the tech side, okay? I need a CTO. You don't need a CTO. What you need is a senior engineer, or a head of engineering, or a manager of engineering, or a, not a VP, that's too high. A director of engineering would even be too high. Founders should be the only people on your team with a C level until you hit 50 employees, maybe 50. I like to think 100, somewhere between there. When you're 20, 25 employees, C level people are 250,000 to half a million a year. They get good chunk of stock options. They manage teams of 8, 15, 40 in certain orgs. Like a CTO at a 200-person SaaS company is managing a department of 40 or 50 people. So just simmer down with the C titles. Like, don't hand them out to people, because they have real meaning in the world. And again, something I had not necessarily realized. It's a pretty common thing. So don't mess that up. And then last thing I'll say on this, I think I get into incentives soon, is leads and managers. So this for me is something I didn't have my head around. We got to 10 employees. I was managing everyone. Everyone reported to me. That sucked, because you're doing kind of one-on-ones once a month or once a week, and you don't necessarily want to get in that boat. So here are my rules of thumb. Leads, so here's a lead versus a manager. A manager is someone who can hire and fire, who can approve vacation, who talks about raises, manages the money, does annual reviews, does one-on-ones, like management, okay? A lead is someone who technically leads a discipline. So a development lead, software development lead, is someone who no one reports to, but they are the architect, right? They are the one who is keeping your code base sane. A customer success lead maybe doesn't manage anyone technically, but they are the leader. When we say, well, what should the customer success policy be, or what should we do next? We look to the lead, okay? The reason it's important to have leads is because you don't hire managers until you have usually four-ish or five people in a department, right? When you're early, you're bootstrapped, you can't afford to hire managers. So my rule of thumb, all right, is that appearing? Yes, is have a lead once you have 2 to 3 in a group. So I was lucky enough that I had a co-founder who was a technical lead. So from the very start, he was the development lead. And then our first non-engineering hire was customer success. She wasn't head of customer success, but she was the customer success lead. She was the manager slash lead. And we hired more developers, and Derek technically led them, and I managed everyone, okay? So 2 to 3. And then when you get to about 4 or 5, that's when you've got to think, you can't keep growing. Get to 12, 15 direct reports, it will wreck you, or you'll lose people, because there's no connection, right? So, yeah. And then just a side note, like your first managers, when you hire, even at 4 or 5 people, your first managers almost inevitably have to be individual contributors, just the nature of the beast, because you can't afford to hire someone to manage full time when you're at 10, 15 employees, okay? This is my thinking on that.
As a founder, scaling your product can eat up all your time. Instead of getting stuck with infrastructure headaches and technical debt, find a trusted tech partner who can handle the complex architecture while you focus on growing your business. Our friends from TechStack have been helping U.S. founders build scalable products for over a decade. Visit tech-stack.com/community to claim one of 10 exclusive spots for MicroConf listeners. You'll get a free discovery session plus 10% off your first month. Head to tech-stack.com/community before those spots are gone.
All right, so we're going to talk about equity, stock options, and profit sharing. Very common question. I now have a saved snippet. Because I was either on Indie Hackers or in the Tiny Seed Slack. And I just started typing, and it just, you know, became a book chapter, right? Or like a big section, 1,500 words, pasted it in. It was like, this is great. So then one of my individual investments asked me, like, hey, we're thinking about profit sharing. What are the pros and cons? And I was like, boo. And then when I went to write my book that we keep talking about, I was like, this is great. So this comes almost directly out of that little snippet. Equity is when you give shares in your company, right? Like, we all understand this. There's a reason it's very, very rare to give equity, because there's two problems with it. There's a reason Silicon Valley doesn't do it. There's a reason bootstrappers usually don't do it. It's because, let's just say, my company today is a SaaS company, and it's doing $250,000 a year in revenue. And for simple math, let's say I would probably value it at $1 million, a 4x ARR, right? That's probably high, but let's just say simple math. So let me say, all right, new employee starts, I want to give you 5% equity in my company. So now I've given you 5% times $1 million valuation. Doing math in my head in front of 234 people is amazing. $50,000 I've just given you. So have fun paying that tax bill at the end of the year. That's what equity is. That's why no one uses it, because there's tax implications. In addition, if we have a pass-through entity, in the US it's called an LLC. Obviously, if you're in Britain, it's called something different. At the end of the year, if we make profit, anyone who has equity gets a tax bill whether they get the money or not. So equity becomes complicated. My general rule of thumb, equity is for founders. That's it. I think there's probably an exception here and there. Equity grants usually for founders. Stock options are what Silicon Valley, or it's what has become traditional with startups, frankly. A stock option is when I give you an option to buy equity, right? It's the same thing. But instead of me giving it to you, I say, here you go. And when you want to buy this after you've vested, you have to pay a small price called the strike price for this. I'm not gonna go deep into what stock options are. But the nice part about this is you don't own any of the company. So if I kick off at $1 million in profit, you don't pay a tax bill at the end of the year. In addition, when you go to exercise years later, there's no tax, the tax burden is much simpler, okay? And so when do you stock options? If I were a bootstrapper or a mostly bootstrapper, I would, if I had any inclination that I was going to sell or that I was going to have a secondary offering, meaning sell a portion of the company. Even if I just, I'm thinking, you know, in the next few years, I'm gonna sell 20%, 25% to give some liquidity, I would think about stock options, okay? If I thought I was never gonna sell, which if you listen to my podcast, I often say everyone sells. But if you really are convinced that you're gonna base camp this thing till you're 80, then stock options are probably not a good idea, because you're gonna give it to employees and they start working and they get 3 years and they get 5 years and they get 8 years and they get 10 years and they're like, this is worthless. Companies throwing off millions of dollars, they got nothing, right? That's where profit sharing comes in. So I personally, if I were to start my next, I would do it with stock options, but I also probably would not plan to run it for 40 years, you know? Profit sharing is what we hear about, like Peldy from Balsamiq does this, some of the bigger bootstrap companies that really are convinced that they're gonna hold it for decades. And this is where you offer a percentage of your profits. The best article I've ever seen about this actually is just type in Peldy Balsamiq profit sharing. And he gives the whole formula of how he does it. He tried monthly distributions too much, annual. People would wait around too long for it, so he went to quarterly. He talked about, this is a really interesting mistake actually. He said, first employee starts, I'm like 1% profit. Next employee, 0.5%, 1%, 0.5. And so suddenly he had all this profit out there, and it was like, in retrospect, now what he has is just a pool that goes to all the employees. Usually this starts around 10%. Certain point, maybe you move it to 15% of all your profits for that quarter. I think he might even have it at 20 at this point, but that's the range, 10 to 20%. I would do that from the start rather than onesie, twosie, because those agreements just become legacy very quickly. So profit sharing, if you're gonna run it forever. Hiring paths, so this is when I get pretty prescriptive. I don't wanna spend too much time on this, it can get kind of dry, but as I said at the top, like, is this 100%? No. Do I think it's probably 90-ish? Yeah, I think so. I would certainly follow this on my own if I were doing it. And I have focused specifically on one and two founder companies. So we've done, you know, the State of Independent SaaS survey where we surveyed like 1,000 people a year, 1,000 founders a year. And one and two founders covers about 90% of the examples. Once I went to three, again, I started sketching out this huge tree and I was like, I gotta stop this somewhere. It's insane. Interesting too, this section actually came out directly from a conversation with a couple MicroConf attendees in Minneapolis. So it was about a year ago. And it was Christian Jenko and Shai. And they were saying like a framework for hiring. And I was like, how would you even do that? And then I was like, what if I had, you know, choose your own adventure type thing? And they're like, yeah, do that. So that's what this is. Someday I'll figure out a really good way to represent it, but for now we have a table. So what I realized as I started doing this is I started sketching it out, like, all right, single founder developer, what pattern am I seeing? You know, when do I see it work? And what I realized is if you're in a low touch funnel, and you see it in the upper right, low touch funnel is different than high touch. High touch means I'm doing sales demos, I'm qualifying people, I'm bringing them in, I'm gonna have a lower customer count, I'm gonna have more sales effort, usually kind of lower support effort, all right? Low touch is marketing driven, right? I'm getting a bunch of leads, I'm putting them through a funnel, mostly self-serve. If you're doing demos, it's only for your higher end customers. So let's assume low touch. So if I was a single founder, engineer, usually what the first hire is support. And the reason is because low touch is high volume and support is the lowest value task, right? So we see like Derek Reimer runs SavvyCal now, single founder, engineer. His first hire was support. Now he happens to outsource it to a company, but it's still a hire. It's someone who's full-time handling support. And then second hire depends on the space you're in. So if you were to build a marketing automation provider today, you probably need two or three engineers for about a year to hit any type of feature parity with ConvertKit, Drip, whatever, you know, MailChimp, anything, right? Tremendous amount of engineering effort because that's a very competitive space. So in that case, your second hire will probably be an engineer because you just need to build. If you're not in a space like that, and instead you're in a nice tight niche where there aren't that many good competitors, marketing is what I would go after. Again, it's low touch, so I'm trying to expand my funnel. Someone you're gonna have to manage, you can't hand marketing off this early, but it is someone to do some of the marketing tasks or help you with it. So I'm not gonna spend all that time on everyone, but I want you to see the kind of the logic of how I get to each. And it's not just logic through, I went through literally every company that I have insight into, and I was like, what was their, and I either knew their first hire or I asked them. And I started just mapping of like, oh yeah, that makes sense, that's why, right? So this is it. You also see I have rarity on the right because there are some of these combos that are very rare and I'm gonna skim through them quick. Like in low touch, like a single founder salesperson. This is super rare, right? Why would you go in low touch if that's what you are, right? So I'll zip through those later. All right, so then this one has two founders. We have an engineer, developer, and we have a subject matter expert. So if you're building software for salons, then the subject matter expert has run a salon or worked in the salon industry or been to run an agency for a salon, like has a bunch of expertise. Usually first hire is the same. You're gonna start seeing a pattern here. Second hire is engineering if they need to catch up, or it's marketing if they need more leads. Subject matter expert is oftentimes running a lot of marketing, but since it's low touch, you need to build that flywheel, you need more help. Founder one, founder two, engineer and sales. This is actually very rare, because if you have a great salesperson, why are you doing low touch sales? You should do it with a marketer, right? So this one's same, support, marketing, or engineering. Then let's look at two founders, engineer and marketing, which is common. It's gonna be support, and it's gonna be marketing or engineering. And you're gonna see that this one maps out pretty consistent. Designer and engineer, support, marketing, or engineering. So it's all pretty much the same the whole way down. Some are rarer than others. And then these are all the rare ones where it's, I'm a single founder marketer with no engineering, you know, no engineering co-founder. It exists, right? We funded a few with Tiny Seed, but it's definitely more rare. In fact, when we did the, I think it was the State of Independent SaaS survey, I think the number is 85. It's somewhere between 85 and 90% of like MicroConf type SaaS companies have at least one engineering, co-founder. So, you'll see these. The first hire on all of them has to be an engineer in essence, because you can't do anything, right? You need to write code. And the second hire is usually support. So that's the low touch. The high touch is similar but different, right? If you're an engineer, you're building something in high touch, usually you are doing sales and you are onboarding people and you're doing support and you're writing the code. The first hire I most often see here is customer success, because this is something you can hand. Like I was John Adege, I have a same rule of thumb. He said, as a founder, don't hand off sales until you're about a million ARR. That jives. Half a million to a million is my rule of thumb. Also, as a founder, don't hand off product until about half a million or a million, because finding someone good to do that to, you know, it requires a lot of money. So engineering, usually the first hire is success. Second is sales or marketing, depending on where you need the most. Engineer, subject matter expert, we have marketing, engineering, or success. And yeah, these ones vary a lot. I like this.
I wanted to let you know that our MicroConf Mastermind program is open for applications. I've talked a lot on this podcast about how important masterminds have been to my entrepreneurial success, but finding the right founders to join up with can be hard. Over the past few years, our team has successfully hand-matched over 1,000 founders into mastermind groups by looking at your revenue, team size, strengths, goals, and a few other data points to make sure your peer group is the right fit. Once matched, you'll also have access to our mentorship series, a 3-month program where you can connect with some great minds in sales, business development, marketing, and more. If you're looking for accountability, honest feedback about your business, and the opportunity to make new friends that care about your success, you can learn more and apply today at microconfmasterminds.com. Applications are only open until March 31st, so make sure you sign up before then. That's microconfmasterminds.com.
So put yourself in, you know, for your first or second hire, if you're in this room, this is what I recommend, unless you have an extenuating circumstance. And then these are the rare ones. Again, it's like, I'm in a high touch market, I need sales, but I'm a single founder marketer. Like it just doesn't make a ton of sense. So, all right, last section here is about, so let's say you don't want to follow the hiring path, or let's say you're on your third hire, then you know you don't have a path anymore, right? So how do you fire yourself from all the roles that you do today? This is one of my most popular tweets of all time. Of all the deep like tweet threads I've done, the things, this is it, really, one sentence. But it's gotten a ton of retweets. Your job as a founder is to fire yourself from one role after another. And that's really it. It's you start off doing 10 things, and then you hire someone to do one, and you do 9. And you know, things like this, right? That most of the things you don't want to be doing, unless you're like a masochist, support, taxes, accounting. And so the question is, you know, which job do you fire yourself from next? And get this question a lot, actually. A lot of my advising is helping founders, they either know they need to hire and I'm helping them figure out the role, or they don't know they need to hire. And they come to me and they're like, my hair's on fire, everything's all crazy. I'm like, oh, well, you need to hire then. And then the next question is, what do I hire? So this is the process that I go through and that we've gone through. I went through at Drip, we do it at Tiny Seed, we do it at MicroConf. And it's basically asking yourself a few questions and taking notes and logging time over a couple weeks. So the first question is, what am I doing on a daily or a weekly basis? Usually I will track my time for about, I'll really just track tasks, not even time. Track every task I do for about 2 weeks. So case in point, when we first started Tiny Seed, we're running an accelerator and it's just me, and I really didn't want to do the day-to-day of an accelerator, right? It's just not my gifting. And so Einar and I got together and, well, what are we doing? Well, we're scheduling founders, we're getting mentors, we're doing perks, we're, you know, whatever it is that happens in an accelerator. And then we followed this whole process and hired Tracy. And then about 8 months ago, Einar and I realized we were doing a ton of internal ops stuff, legal and taxes and just all the stuff that goes along with funds, like having a fund. And so we did this again, and then we hired an ops person. So it's worked really well for us. It doesn't just tell you who you need to hire, but it helps you. You have bullets now for a job description, you know? And I'm gonna tell you how to not make it stupid, because you can put a bunch of crap in here across five roles. You can have a software engineer who's supposed to do sales and also be customer success. It's like, well, that's not gonna work. It doesn't exist. But anyways, track every task for 2 weeks. You start getting a bunch of bullets. Then you have to also ask yourself what should be getting done that isn't. And that was where we start filling in the gaps of like, what's the stuff I haven't been publishing a blog post every week like we should have, right? Or there's stuff that just wasn't getting done because we didn't have the help. So we also sat down, put those on the list. And then we asked ourselves, it helps if it's in the first person. Then I asked myself, of the things that I am doing that are on this list, which am I bad at that someone else could do better? And there's a lot usually for me. Which am I good at, but I really don't enjoy? Because that intersection is, of course, burnout. You can do it, but if you don't enjoy it, you do it for a long time, that Venn diagram is burnout. And which of these, if leveled up, like if someone can do them substantially better, would be likely to grow the company. So the big mistake I referenced earlier is exactly this tweet. As a founder, since you fulfill 3 or 8 or 10 roles, it's really easy and it's a big mistake to think you can hire someone to do the same. So most people excel when they focus on one, maybe two roles. So if you hire a marketer plus, is the same individual, right? Marketer plus support plus operations, you're gonna get someone mediocre at all three. I made the mistake. My very first non-engineering hire was actually, it's Anna Jacobson, a lot of you know her, and she's phenomenal at customer success. When I hired her, I had her doing marketing, customer success, and sales. It's absolutely bananas. Like, no one does that, right? And within a month, I was like, all right, I need to take something off your plate because you don't have the expertise, and she didn't have enough time, right? So I took marketing back, she did customer success and sales. So that's the mistake, is you seek a unicorn, which is just someone who does 3 or 4 roles. Founders are unicorns, meaning they're very hard to find in the wild and they do a lot of roles, but man, once you hit 10, 20 employees, everyone starts being very specialized. In your first 10, you have people do 2 things at once. The nice part is, I alluded to this earlier, there's only 10 departments in SaaS. That's it. Until you get to 5 million, 10 million, you have BI teams. You know, you can make up somebody's RevOps, whatever. This is it. You kind of figure out how to build the product. You figure out how it's going to look in design. You write the code in engineering. You market, you sell it, you support it, you success it. And then HR, legal, and finance, frankly, are ops for me. They're just all the same thing, but I put them in there. Because if you're doing 100 million a year, like HR is separate from like your legal, separate from finance, right? But the good news is I have all these bullets, right? You put bullets, bullets, bullets. Holy shit. Well, who do I hire? Well, you want to try to fit it into one of these departments because these are the departments of SaaS, like it or not. So you start to kind of say, well, this is either one role or two roles that I'm going to combine. But rules of thumb for me are you don't hand off product until 500,000, probably 1 million ARR. Almost no early stage bootstrap founder hires a full-time designer. If someone's not already a founder, you just do freelance. Let's see, that's 2 of them. And then HR, legal, and finance, you either hire an ops person when you hit about 8 to 12, or you do it yourself for now. Those go away. Ops is very obvious when you need to hire it. So realistically, it's only 5, right? It's like you have these bullets, it's all this random crap. How do you fit it into one of these 5 in a perfect world? Or maybe 2. And I'm going to talk about the only combinations I've seen work, all right? So if you can fit it into one, great. And then it's like, well, I know I need a customer success manager. Quick side, manager at the end of a title means they manage a process, not humans. Manager at the beginning of a title means they have direct reports. Just another rule of thumb. So customer success manager, or if it's a bunch of support stuff, I make them a support rep. In the early days, you will often have to combine roles. And I think this might be my last slide, actually. And these are the combined roles. This was kind of the, when I started writing the book chapter on hiring or on team building, I had a bunch of basic stuff that I think we hear all the time, but like this is the one that I was like, oh, this is gold, is the times when I've seen combined roles work at early stages. Again, if you're at 50 employees, you're no longer combining roles because you have revenue or funding or something to just hire subject matter, you know, individual contributors that do the one thing. You can't do that in early stage. But don't hire, you know, don't cross sales and engineering. No individual that's not a founder does that. Okay, so that's what this is. So I have seen customer success and sales in one person. Anna Jacobson, our first customer success hire, did it. It was great. Works best when they're warm inbound leads rather than if it's cold outbound, you're paying on commission. It's a different personality type. But customer success and sales can work. Customer success and support. Usually the customer success person is overqualified for the email and live chat, but it is something they do. And when you're at four people, it's just what you do. The other one, the sales crossovers, of course, are a salesperson, AE, account executive, who also is doing BDR, SDR work, which is qualifying prospects. This is relatively common. Legal, finance, and HR, as I said, ops person at a certain point. You're just going to combine them into one. In terms of engineering crossover, have I seen software developers or have we hired software engineers who have design chops? We have. Hard to find, but they exist. Have we seen engineers who also have a product sense of what should be built, how it should be built? I have. Not the easiest to find, but take them if you can get them. And then product manager plus a designer is not super uncommon, right? So those are kind of the engineering product things I've seen crossed over. And then the last two really are just marketing. Marketing departments are the most complex in a SaaS company. Engineering, it's you're kind of one of these, you're a senior, you're a junior, you're whatever. Marketing, it's like there's strategy, what should we do? There's actual implementation, what button should I push in AdWords? And there's project management, making sure shit's getting shipped out. And there's just all the mix, right? And if there's 10 marketing approaches, you usually have 5 or 10 people doing them, so it's complicated. But marketing strategy plus implementing one or two is not uncommon. Usually then you hire out the rest of freelancers. Or marketing strategy plus the project management of it. And that's what a lot of founders wind up doing, right? Is they kind of figure out what to do, they stay on top of it, and then you have 4 or 5 freelancers reporting to you.